We made this.
Hello all and welcome to another edition of Pick a Disc. I'm your host Matt Latham, and this is the podcast where someone picks a disc to talk about for whatever reason they want to. And today the guest is Ryan Pack from the Soundtrack Your Life podcast. And he's here to talk about original pop material by The Streets. Now if The Streets sounds familiar, then they should do. We actually have covered The Streets before. We covered them all the way back in episode 20, covering A Grand Old Come for Free, which was their second album, and we're covering their debut original pop material. Now, the standalone nature of Pick a Disc, and there's no kind of narrative through line unless you're really invested in me looking and expanding my musical horizons and just keeping a track of all the references I make to other episodes, which I really shouldn't do. But yeah, a lot of the times that the episodes stand alone, and this one stands alone as well. But if you want to, I recommend you listen to the Grand Old Come for Free episode in episode 20, just to, you know, get a bit of a background onto that, because I do reference it a bit. Not much, but a bit. Before we move on and hit play on the interview, I want to say just you can follow us on Instagram, on Facebook and on Twitter under the name Pick a Disc. There's also the Discord as well in the show notes. So if you want to come in and say hi, tell us what you're listening to, what you're expecting, which bands you've seen live, feel free to jump into the Discord and just hello and just, you know, share like. And with that, I think that's all the self-shilling that I can do vocally. So the only thing left to do is speak to Ryan. Exciting for me, this is the first time I get to revisit an artist with a different album. My guest Ryan, Soundtrack Your Life, from all the way in California. How are you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great. How are you, Matt?
Good. I'm good. We're just doing usually the old a slice of British life, where he gets the British experience and me asking him about the weather. quite apt for what we're going to be talking about today, I think, in terms of assimilating British culture.
Or yeah, I've got a lot of questions. Very excited.
Oh, trust me. I was I'm talking to someone, a friend at work, who I've spoken about said artist several times. And I was saying, oh, I'm going to be chatting to someone who about this album, and they're basically based in California, Los Angeles. He's going, I would be very interested to find out how they take this album. And I went, I'm looking forward to hearing that. And before we kind of like just beat around the bush, Ryan, why don't you tell the lovely listeners the disc that you've picked for us to talk about today?
We are talking about Original Pirate Material by The Streets.
The Streets. And for long-term listeners who've been listening for a long, long time, all the way back in 2019, have we doing the podcast that long? Yes, episode 20, the second ever Matt pick is when I picked A Grand Old Come for Free, which is the album after this, hosted by Colin from We Dig Music, who you've spoken to on your show in the past. So I know I gave him the heads up that we're talking about this, and he's very keen to listen to our conversation. So, and why did you pick Original Pirate Material?
A big reason that I picked it was because that you picked A Grand Don't Come for Free.
Yeah.
And as a Streets fan, I've actually never talked to someone from the UK about The Streets, so I thought that'd be really interesting.
Right, okay. And you've, what's decent, what's good as well is that you've spoken to someone who's from Birmingham, which is where Mike Skinner's originally from as well. So there's a lot of kind of crossover in terms of, I think, both London and Birmingham. So I think, yeah, so you've kind of chatted to someone about his hometown. So how did you discover The Streets? How did you learn of their existence?
That is a great question. I was racking my mind about it, you know, ever since I picked it. I was like, how did I hear about The Streets? I have to say it was probably some sort of online music site, whether it was Pitchfork here or maybe it was the NME online. it had to have been one of those two sites. And, you know, they were raving about this new, it's kind of hip hop, but it's not. It's got a little bit of electronic, but it's not, you know, like the Prodigy or the Chemical Brothers. It was kind of a brand new sort of thing, like a very fresh sound. So I investigated it back in 2002. There was no streaming, so I think I pulled up like some really low res music video. It was like 45 seconds of Let's Push Things Forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I really like this. so I kind of came from that.
So it's like right back nearly 20 years. Well, the album's 20 years old, so it's around about the time this album came out then. Oh, that's interesting. I was fully expecting you to say, oh, it was something like about 5, 6, 7 years ago, just randomly, but no, you was there right from the start then. Yeah.
I wouldn't say that, like, you know, I'm an original fan. Like, I definitely read a lot of press about it. And I liked what I heard. I think I found Let's Push Things Forward and Has It Come to This, because those were the singles. And even though they were 45-second like clips, I was like, I'm really digging the sound and I need to go find the album.
So when did you get the album as a whole then? Do you know when you got managed to listen to it properly?
I vividly remember this because it's...
Oh, okay. Sitting back.
So this album represents like the death of physical CDs, in my opinion.
Okay.
So when I went to go buy it, there was a record store right outside of campus where I was going to university. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go there and see if they have the new Streets album. But they were going out of business.
Okay.
And it was kind of a bigger chain, so it wasn't like your mom and pop record store. It was maybe not as big as like the Virgin Megastore. I think it was something that was only in California. But they were going out of business, and I was like, well, I hope I can find this album, because, you know, then it was convenient. It's within walking distance. So I was able to find it, and I think I got an extra discount because they're going out of business.
Okay, was it on CD? So it was CD that you got then?
Yeah, so I got on CD, and I believe it was the week it came out because it was on sale.
All right. Okay, so you managed to find the CD. I can't remember when I got this originally. I do remember listening to it. It was one of those albums that was like pretty much everywhere. It was up on the music channels quite a lot. Has It Come to This was like cropping up on the radio at times as well, and showing up on the radio. First like Sixth Form, it was showing up on there as well. So it was kind of like assimilating. It was hard to miss. And then the album came out and the album blew up. And then I think then when it's on the second, again, not going to get too much in the second album, when the second album came up, it was like everywhere. They got the number one, We Dry Your Eyes, and like a lot more people went back to listen to original pirate material. So for the Streets themselves, I mean, did they have any like success or in America at all? Or was it just more or less like a cult find that you found?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure that out. Like within my group of friends, like the Streets are a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But like you never saw them on like MTV or played on the radio or anything? Or
they didn't make it on the radio or MTV, but when I did go see them live on the Grand Don't Come For Free tour, it was like sold out. It was like a medium-sized venue out here in LA. There was definitely like a lot more buzz for the Streets, I feel like, than like when Blur came out with Park Life in the States.
Because I think I mean, cause it kind of throws me. It's like Oasis as well, I think, where bands that are massively big over here, like, are much more as a kind of one-hit wonder or not as big over there. I mean, a couple of times, like, the only times I ever hear Oasis mentioned in US drama is Wonderwall. And, yeah, and it kind of blows my mind sometimes.
Yeah, anything from that album and that's it.
Yeah, from that second album stuff. So this was, like, the first album of theirs that you listened to then, and... Did you like kind of like follow them onwards? So did you follow the albums afterwards? Or was it this more or less? So did you always keep an eye on them when they released Grand Come For Free, The Hardest Way to Make an Easy Living, Everything Is Borrowed, etc. Was you constantly following them then? Or
yeah, I was following them pretty closely. So when iTunes started like selling music, I believe there was an EP that they released called All Got Our Run-ins. I think it was just basically all the B-sides from the Has It Come to This and Let's Push Things Forward singles.
Yes, All Got Our Run-ins. Yes, yeah.
I remember buying that, and that's why it's also like this transition of the death of physical media, because it was one of the first things I bought digitally.
Yeah, I think I didn't get... No, I've got... No, I think I've got most... No, I've got all four physically. I've got CDs of all four of them. Which I really should have brought out to show on an audio podcast. But the but I do think there's like a shift, because particularly the rise of digital music as well. Particularly, I think it was perhaps more in 2004 than 2002. But I think, with kind of the advent of phones and the ability to start playing MP3s on not only like the iPods or something, but phones had like MP3 playability. So you had like the ability to store about 2 or 3 MP3s on your phone. And then so, I remember going and finding a piece of software to reduce the bit rate of music from 128 CD quality to 32. So it sounds like a really crappy AM radio to have about like 15 songs on. But I think I remember being in pubs and hearing kind of people playing really low quality MP3s of the streets in the pub, going like, "Oh, you need to listen to this," and then it'd be like, "Don't mug yourself," being played or something. Or the irony at all, I think, was one of them as well. But we'll talk about them a bit later on. But yeah, there was like that kind of streets. I think also kind of built for that kind of like playing your mates and stuff. I never really thought about it that way before. Saying when it's like it's one that it's getting to that kind of transition between physical and digital. Yeah, I quite like how it's the album that signals, you can kind of map when that happened. But so you say that you and your friends are kind of like big Streets fans. So you're like, you've got fully aware of the Streets and they're quite well known within your group of friends. How do I phrase it? Okay, so for example, if I flip over a section, so the West Coast, Californian West Coast rap. So NWA gets big and it goes over here and there's a lot of people listening to kind of West Coast rap, and I think over here we have we get quite a lot of content that are based around about the situations and lives that like NWA and Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg always rapped about, so we got a decent kind of understanding of the content that they was talking about. Birmingham doesn't have as much representation, so I'm really, really curious how you took a lot of the content and and what drew you to what the songs were about, because there must be a few things on this album that you're still slightly confused about.
Yes. Obviously there's a lot of slang on this album that doesn't translate over here to the States at all.
Yes.
So, you know, geezers, like here they're just old people. I assume that, you know, it's a derogatory term in his context.
Okay, I think the first in a new segment where Matt translates British slang. And hey, Phil, if this episode develops into an education lesson, I don't mind. So by the time geezer is kind of like, basically like kind of geezers is the idea that there are people who just go out, just go out drinking there's a big drinking culture in the UK. So people that just go out, drink about 10 pints and then kind of just start getting rowdy and really drunk. So they start causing kind of like antisocial behavior and just getting really aggressive with each other. There's a very kind of stereotypical kind of like, right, lads, let's go out and like have a pint and 10 and go and get in a fight with a bouncer and stuff. And it's that kind of like culture. But so they, and a geezer is like a term used for kind of like picking men that will just go out, get drunk, possibly get drink too much and perhaps cause a bit of aggro aggression. So that's what that kind of means. So what did you assume? Is that what you kind of assumed it meant? Or did you really think it just meant old people need to fight in the chip shop or something?
I mean, I knew it was like some sort of negative term.
Yeah.
And it probably wasn't just about elderly people like it is here.
Yeah.
But, you know, that I didn't have that much context. So basically a geezer would be like the character that he plays on The Irony of It All.
Yes. Yeah. It's Terry, I think.
Right.
Terry. Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of like the kind of gist of what the geezer stuff is. But was it kind of like the mystery, this like aspect of British culture that intrigued you at all? Or because I'm assuming it's like, it's like a whole different parallel dimension as opposed to the US.
I mean, I'll admit there's like a bit of a novelty to listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
This white British male telling these stories kind of as a rapper. I do want to say that when I bought the CD, it was in the rap and hip hop section of the store.
Yeah.
And I remember bringing it into work because I worked on campus, and I asked my coworkers, "Can I put this on?" And they said, "What is it?" I said, "It's British rap." And in 2022, you'll still get the same confused look from Americans. British rap.
Well, I think as well, is that you've got kind of with British rap, you've got, I think Mike Skinner and the Streets are very kind of unique in that. One, there's a very kind of like, Colin said it in episode 20 and I've forgotten what it's called. His delivery of like how he delivers his flow and stuff. It's not conventional flowing as you would. It's more or less like he's somehow on beat, but somehow managed to sound offbeat at the same time. So there's that kind of unique stuff. But this was coming straight off of a genre called garage music, which in the late 90s and early noughties was like kind of British rap is like a mixture of time of, there's like a genre called grime and like garage where it's a mixture of kind of dance music. So you have kind of not exactly big beat like the Prodigy or the Chemical Brothers. It's more of a conventional dance music or drum and bass, and it was like kind of rapping over it. And then as garage kind of evolved, garage kind of had a bit more of a melodic pop sound to it. So I don't know if garage ever made it big over there. There are songs like The Artful Dodgers, Craig David, The Artful Dodger, So Solid Crew, Sweet Female Attitude. Basically, there's a lot of songs that are sampling songs from that era. And they got to a point for like, particularly for a couple of years where that genre kind of got really popular in the US, in the UK, and was like getting number one hits and stuff. And I think Mike Skinner came from that kind of background, but then it started to die off. And so it started to kind of like die down. It started to get less popular when, I think what happened in the 2000s? I think it was about to start getting kind of like the indie boom, and the pop music boom. So Britney Spears started coming in and stuff. So we had a bit more of a pop music revival. The indie boom would come in a few years with The Killers and Franz Ferdinand and such. But then Mike Skinner managed to somehow give us something that was slightly different from what you expect British rap to be. It's not someone putting on a kind of American accent, because you'll get a lot of people who try to be kind of put on like American street accent and stuff. He was coming out with this kind of like slice of life type thing, like type songs and stuff, and it was immensely relatable. I can see the kind of like the bit where as a novelty that you're seeing, there's this like kind of weird alien culture and way of speaking. But when that came out, there were so many people that could relate to that album. It's one of the most relatable rap albums of all time. There's the sequel as well. So it's probably the most realistic example of a British person rapping and still sounding good that you'll ever get.
I did find the album relatable. So I went to school for film, so I really was drawn to the storytelling aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think I just kind of understood things just kind of innately, like turn the page, you can kind of tell, is this, you know, this is the introduction to the streets. I want it to sound epic. You know, it, like, you can kind of understand like his thought process in a lot of the songs. I think because Damon Albarn with Gorillaz had kind of brought this kind of mishmash of like hip hop and dub reggae, like I think Let's Push Things Forward feels a lot more familiar than I would have imagined it would in 2002. But I just remember like the song It's Too Late, just how heartbreaking that story is that he tells and how moving that song is. Like, you know, you could definitely tell there was a lot of talent and a lot of thought put into this album.
We'll get to some of the songs specifically in a moment, but I think one of the kind of things I think is interesting about this album as well is that I think particularly 20, like there's some bits that are interesting to look at with a 2022 vision in that I think a lot more in the second album, because I remember saying something like this in the episode with Colin with About a Grand Uncle for Free, in that Mike Skinner kind of turns a couple of cliches about like kind of the alpha male rap artist on its head. So there's a few songs on here which kind of have kind of like the attempt at being like the alpha male kind of mentality that you'll find in rap music quite a lot often, particularly in this time. So with a lot of like American contemporaries where it's like, I'm the best, I'm the baddest, you can't, no one's as good as me, etc. And there are bits like that, but there's always a kind of self-deprecating line in it. So there's a lot more kind of, it's a very British mentality in that you go like, it's like, oh yeah, yeah, but I'm probably going to like fudge it up or something. So you have songs like It's Too Late, which shows a lot of vulnerability. Don't mug yourself. He's surrounded by kind of people who have got kind of the wrong kind of like machismo kind of, the people he's with Don't Mug Yourself have that kind of mentality, and they're trying to convince him who doesn't have that mentality to have that mentality. And says, no, you don't call it. You got to play cool yeah. Stuff. Yeah. And I have always think that Mike Skinner has never been afraid to show that kind of vulnerability or challenge that masculine, that kind of like ideal. And the irony of it all, okay, I really want to get into that a bit more detail when we talk about the songs, but the irony of it all is also another example of it, of them kind of like, if not attacking, critiquing that kind of culture and stuff. And did you understand that aspect of it all? Or is it again like one of those things that you never...
No, I think in general, I was able to understand what he was trying to say in the songs. You know, I think he does a really good job at painting what it's like to be young, you know, like yeah. in your early 20s. I think that's why I related to it, because I was, you know, I feel like you would go to your friend's house and they would have that same argument of the irony of it all. You know, yeah. like that's what you do in your 20s, like 2 a.m. and you have discussions about stuff like that. So,
I do think that particularly in the UK, everyone will be too reserved and just won't bother with that. And they're just like, and again, you will probably just people who will go out drunk and people who will just be getting high and weird and they'll never mix. In terms of the album as well, there's quite a lot of interesting things that he said that he was influenced by. So he had a lot of US influence. So he cites Raekwon and RZA, as well as Nas, the Illmatic especially. But then I think what he said is that he was trying to combine the UK garage sound with the lyrical content about all the little ventures you go on, rather than the style UK hip hop. And as I was saying earlier about the kind of people who were pretending to be from the West Coast, a quote from Mike Skinner was saying that he accused UK hip hop being someone from Reading pretending to be Biggie or Q-Tip. So the journalist Simon Reynolds identified the content of the lyrics as capturing the garage scene's submerged reality. Because it wasn't really a genre that was in nightclubs. It was more or less in like kind of underground raves and stuff. So nightclubs was much more into the dance or the cheesy pop stuff. And UK garage, particularly in the late 90s, was kind of more on pirate radio, which is where the album title gets its name from. And I think before we move on to tracks as well, the interesting bit I always find is that he recorded it in a cupboard in his house. So everything's all recorded himself, and all the beats were done by himself. So pretty much, I think all the music was done himself, and all the vocals, apart from the guest vocals, was all kind of like done himself. If you told me it was done in a studio, I would believe you. I think it sounds really good for what is essentially homemade.
Yeah, it's not, you know, what we would call lo-fi here. You know, it's not, it doesn't sound like it's been recorded on like a couple like tape recorders, you know, where there's a bunch of hiss and distorted vocals, you know, like those early Guided by Voices albums.
Yeah, the Guided by Voices reference. If you want to find out a bit more about that, you can listen to me appear on Soundtrack Your Life later in June for a bit more discussion about the lo-fi of Guided by Voices. So if we go to the tracks, which tracks jump out to you that you really wanted to talk about specifically, if you can choose?
Yeah, it's hard. I guess we could start with Let's Push Things Forward, since, you know, that's kind of the song that drew me in.
Yeah, I think it was their second single, but I think it's the one that's it's one that's kind of more conventionally rap, whereas where their first album, which was Has Come to This, was slightly more talking. This one feels like it's got more of a flow. And what was it about this one that kind of drew you in, or that when you first heard it?
I really like the beat of the song. It has kind of that dub bass. And he has that line about, like, you won't find us on Alta Vista.
I noticed that when I was listening to it a couple of days ago. Alta Vista going, man, if you want to date an album.
I mean, even in 2002, it was like, Alta Vista, really?
Yeah.
So there was just like this humor to the song. And perhaps it was not intentional in this case, but it caught my ear, like, Alta Vista. And then I think he says, it's called classic, not bestseller.
Yeah, yeah, which in retrospect's kind of ironic, considering it became a massive bestseller. But yeah, no, there's a lot of kind of almost like nice wit to it, I think the bit I really quite like is, it's in the third bit. So it's the one where he kind of like reiterates kind of the Britishness of it, where he goes, Spidgel's like, he's in riches. Over here we say birds, not bitches.
Yep. Also love that line.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, but again, it's I think that's when we're saying that he was kind of critiquing, and he wasn't kind of fond of the direction that UK hip hop was going in because of kind of embracing the US version. It was kind of unique just to him to start rapping about birds and, birds, and basically talking about, there's another British reference somewhere. Where is it? Where he talks about talking about birds and the Artful Dodger, which again, I think kind of dates it because I don't know if you've ever heard of the Artful Dodger.
I think I've heard of the Artful Dodger, and I think I've heard of Craig David.
Yeah. So I think, the Artful Dodger were pretty, really, really big at that point in terms of doing anthems, bangers. So he did the Craig David. I think they did Moving Too Fast with someone else. But yeah, that's another kind of like slice of life, which kind of dates it. But I think as well is that, I think particularly with this point as well, you see this kind of like white British guy kind of rapping, comparisons inevitably will go towards Eminem. And as someone who was a massive, massive, and I mean massive fan of Eminem in the past, I was often seeing kind of like crossovers or kind of similar bits. So there's a lot of, particularly the end, I think I see too, where he doesn't try to be as complex as the rhymes and stuff, but does he with your thickens, mittens, conditions, spitting, bitten, smitten, where he's trying to do the multiple kind of like rhyming stuff, whereas like in previous songs, he wasn't doing that. I do quite like how he's doing that, but then using pretty much the British pronunciation of stuff just to make that rhyme. So do you want to say anything else before this song before we move on?
I think that covers it for that song.
Okay. So which song did you want to talk about next?
Probably Don't Mug Yourself.
I love Don't Mug Yourself. So what is it about this song that you quite like or you want to talk about? Do you need Musvit translating?
I mean, I think the freak out in the middle of the song is pretty good.
Yeah.
I just feel like it was one of the go-to songs when I tried to get someone into the streets. I feel like it's one of the catchier songs.
Yeah, yeah. I could see how that would be a kind of like, okay, if you don't like this song, you're probably not going to like the rest of them. Or at least a majority of the songs anyway. But yeah, I'm pretty sure a few times that, excuse the language, a few people at school used to go, seriously, Matt, you fucker, or blah, blah, you fucker. we used to kind of like quote that. But no, I think, again, it's one of those, I think it's one of the highlight, one of the songs that highlights his comedic, he's like penchant for the comedic. And it's, again, a very unique way of delivering stuff. And the storytelling's really, really good as well. So he's got a really good thorough line of storytelling, and he paints this picture. And if anything, I think it's him kind of getting into the mold, getting ready for a grand outcome for free. I'm not going to get too much into the album, whereas that's kind of like a whole narrative. I think he's kind of practicing how to tell longer form stories with this song.
Yeah, it's kind of a prequel to Fit, But You Know It. I feel like it's kind of a spiritual prequel to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there has been conversations very similar to this every Saturday or Sunday morning after, when everyone goes to a greasy cafeteria for a fry up to soak up the hangover that they have. Yeah, because the music, I don't know if you've seen the music video has flips in between the greasy cafeteria and the pub of the night before. Again, it's just so essentially British and relatable. Again, I think it's one of these songs that kind of challenge the, again, comes like almost alpha male mentality, or the kind of masculinity of its like protagonists. So for the third verse is that where he goes, honestly, it's not like that. You're acting like I'm dancing, like prancing like a sap, jumping with your claps and that. I think that's him being slightly too defensive and being a bit too defensive or over too offensive. And there's kind of self-awareness. And again, something that Mike Skinner would do, returns to quite well in this album, actually, as well as future albums. Yeah, and the ending bit where I think it's Calvin who starts improvising always makes me laugh.
Yeah.
And took me ages to realise what exactly he was saying. I'm not going to repeat it because it's comedically filthy. Where else do you want to move on to?
Should we talk? So I just wanted to bring up Sharp Darts.
Yes, okay. Sharp Darts.
I'm bringing up all the up-tempo bangers.
Yes.
So originally this wasn't like my favorite song on the album, but I think when Mike later on went to start the DOT, I think there was some like interview video with Danny Brown, the rapper, not the podcaster. And Danny Brown was talking about how this song was a kind of an influence on him and how he got into the streets. And I just thought it was kind of interesting as an American rapper. And I know Danny Brown's not the most conventional American rapper, but you know, that he was listening to this song and finding inspiration from it.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think it's one of those ones where, again, this is another one where he's kind of very stuck to a flow, where he's got an actual flow rather than the kind of like talk rapping that he's done in other songs. And again, it's more like, again, conventional song because they're all quite short in places as well. So this one's quite short, very to the point. And again, I think a lot of the language used is something that you probably wouldn't find in a conventional kind of American rap artist. So like the chorus, like the barometer and interpreter line, I can't think who else would use Eminem at some point, probably. But yeah, it's just the language and the language just feels so unique. And again, it feels like it contains a lot of kind of British style idioms or kind of references and stuff like UK's Ambassador Excalibur, call you solicitor,
right?
Yeah, the word solicitor again. Again, if that turned up in an American song, that would be a completely different thing of what it means over here. So, do you know the British, what the British term for solicitor is? Or
I'm not quite sure.
But yeah, it's basically solicitor's a lawyer. It's just like, yeah. So, yeah, I think in the US it means, as in like soliciting is a crime, I think.
Yeah, that's like a door-to-door salesman.
Yeah, yeah. But no, a solicitor is basically like a lawyer. Or the equivalent of a lawyer. It's the, I don't know if you've ever seen British law dramas where they're all wearing those silly wigs and gowns and stuff. Yeah, that's a solicitor. So, but yeah.
So glad I came on to talk about this. I'm learning so many new things.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing that apparently we speak that same language, but it's completely different and alien.
Right. Wait, so going back to Don't Mug Yourself for a second, does he say beer-larious? In the song, does he say beer-larious? It sounds like he's saying beer-larious.
No, don't know after Grace Cafeteria. Yeah. Last night was some beer-lariness. Yeah, basically beer-larious. So basically being very, very drunk. So yeah, so that's basically the beer-larious. So it's like, it's pretty much, I think, like a made-up word. But yeah, it's definitely beer-lariness.
Beer-lariness.
Yeah, I think Sharp Darts is another good one. What else do you, any others that you want to bring up?
Are we going to talk about the irony of it all?
You might, yeah. So, yeah, I remember one of the first songs that wasn't a single before I had the album that I remember hearing was this song, because I remember it being played in the 6-1 Common Room. It's, like 20 minutes before we started recording, I found there are videos of American kind of YouTubers watching the video of this, and it's hilarious because the majority of them don't understand what's going on.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's this one guy who's just sitting there going, I have no idea what he's talking about. Going, man, you Brits are weird.
But, oh, interesting.
Yeah. So what is it about this song that you wanted to talk about?
Well, it's the only song on the album where he's basically changing his voice to speak as different characters.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I think going to his penchant for comedic. For those who haven't listened to it, The Are In It All is a song where you've got two characters. You've got Terry and Tim. Terry is a guy who goes out, gets drunk, gets beer lariness. A geezer. So I think he refers to himself as a geezer at this point. So he goes out, gets drunk, blah, like causes fights and stuff. And he also plays Tim, who's just a someone who's like an undergraduate who just sits with his friends getting high and going to bed at 6 a.m. And there's a debate about the fact that Tim is breaking the law, even though Terry's causing grief and stuff. And it's very interesting, very comedic, but very interesting song as well. So, I mean, can you remember the first time you heard it? Can you remember your first thoughts of hearing this when you first heard it? Or
it probably had to have been, you know, the first time going through the album. And Obviously, because of the voice changes, it kind of sticks out. And being in college, it's like, I've been to parties where people have had the same conversation.
Yeah.
But not as funny.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure like the debate is kind of like forever eternal. In terms of this, I can't remember this debate being very massive at the time. So it's either going to be, it's probably either just my experience, but I don't know that many people who were kind of smoking weed, particularly around that time, when I was about 17 or 18 when this came out. But I think there's a very kind of interesting, kind of serious, like debate to be had around this. And you can kind of, he makes no attempt to mask which side of the debate he's on.
Correct.
Yeah. But again, it's really good, really funny. I only found out there was a music video to this like a few years ago, just before, a couple of years before I recorded the previous episode on the streets, where he's just basically in a pub and then cuts to him in like glasses, just sat with his friends, getting high from a marijuana and stuff. Because it's a very unconventional song as well, because it doesn't have the kind of hooks. It's just like a conversation that cuts in, so it kind of breaks like norms of what you expect from a song.
Yeah, this is not Eminem's Guilty Conscience.
No, it's not. No, but dating it to some PlayStation is my vocation. I think the PlayStation 2 had just come out at that point. But again, it's like the PlayStation is the only thing that I've always kind of had conscientious thing is like, who the hell would pick out pizza? Would pick out chicken on pizza? But, So going back to kind of like the idea about kind of going back to the slice of life, there's the mad fight, sad sight, vulgar snake bite, going on like a right geese, easier to action, look to me like that. Again, the geese, going back to the geezers and the kind of aggro stuff. But then saying like those drugs and criminal, those thugs are the pinnacle of the downfall of society. Again, kind of the downfall of society, a common trope where people kind of like start just like attacking certain members of society, saying, the downfall of society. It's like, have you ever heard of the comedian Stuart Lee?
No.
No. There's an alternative comedian called Stuart Lee, who's kind of like very clever kind of comedy. There's a great bit where, particularly with like the kind of like the rise of Euroscepticism, which led to Brexit and stuff, there's like, you get kind of like cultures where like hashtag not all British, not all men, blah blah blah, so those kind of like idiots, they're going like, there's a bit where he goes, I was just in this pub, and this guy, these days you get arrested just for being English. Oh, right. And the base of the joke is that whenever he's trying to talk to him, the guy just goes, these days you get arrested for being English. These days you get arrested for being English. And it's that kind, and again, that kind of crossover with the kind of quote-unquote stereotypical geezer. with that kind of mindset, probably going too much, but you probably get a rough idea of what I'm on about. That kind of pinnacle, that downfall society line, just reminds me so much of that stand-up routine. It's about 7 minutes of him, of just Stuart Lee going, these days you get arrested for being English, and for some reason it's just constantly funny. It's like the sideshow Bob stepping on a rake.
Right. Yeah. It reminds me of, for some reason I was listening to sports radio a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. My mistake, obviously. But, you know, so they're decriminalizing marijuana in California, and a lot of the states here are. And I remember, you know, the producer of the show being like, I don't want to take my kid to a park where it just smells like, I'm like, who's smoking weed at your kid's park?
Yeah.
Yeah, like everyone's just going to go outside their house, go to the park and just start smoking up there because it's legal now. Like it was such a, you know, it's the downfall of society. It's that same sort of concept.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, yeah. And it's that kind of like mentality and that kind of like subsection of society. I think that Skinner's kind of like either, if perhaps not attacking, just more kind of nudging the stuff. And but yeah, so it's like the going to Amsterdam in the new year, because I take pride in my hobby, making homemade bongs using my engineering degree.
Yeah.
which still makes, and it's like, dear leaders, please legalize weed for these reasons. And for some reason, that always makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably got time for a couple more, if you want to quickly mention any others.
Maybe I'll save this one. Say that for later. Has it come to this? I mean, it's the first single. Just that beat is so memorable for me. Like, it, you know, because Garage didn't really make it over to the States. I was like, I've never heard anything like this before.
Yeah. This is like the garage one. There's the vault. I mean, I think it might be one of the first ones we recorded as well. There's a very kind of lo-fi, deliberate kind of, it's not a polished like take on his vocal either. So this one sounds like he's recorded it on his phone or on his laptop microphone, and it works. I don't know why, it just seems to work. It seems to, with the music, it just feels like you're there at the time. And mm-hmm. yeah, and you can hear why it kind of just resonated with people going, like, after, so like you have, like, after like years of like West Coast rap and Eminem coming in, and Eminem, they people liking Eminem, but then suddenly, I mean, oh, there's a white guy rapping, and then suddenly there's this like rock British guy that's like doing kind of like rap sounds, but using music that we've danced to in the clubs and stuff. It's it all clashes well. I mean, again, deliberate uses of kind of like British, kind of like the British culture, where he talks about Way Up Henry with precision, a few herbs and a bit of Benson. And I think Henry is a slang term. I think it's a cigarette. I think, don't quote me on that. But yeah, basically, okay, slang you wouldn't find Eminem using anyway. So,
sorry, what does lock down your varial mean?
Lock down your aerial.
Your aerial.
Yeah, lock down aerial. It's, I think it's just a case of just either putting your aerial down or just tweaking the aerial on your radio. So, or antenna, like, yeah, on your radio. Is it the antenna or the, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's just what that means. It's just, kind of adjusting it. And again, you think I'm ghetto, stop dreaming, daydreaming. I'm giving your birds some feelings. Again, because I think he was living in London at the time, and again he's talking about the underground. Again, talking about the underground. And what's interesting as well is that I don't think I brought it up yet as well. There's a lot of kind of like what I didn't realize until like quite recently was that there's a lot of subtle references to other songs on the album, or even other songs or concepts on the album. So there's a bit, I think, in If Not Don't Look Yourself, there's a bit where it says don't be late, and I'm sure I think in Push Things Forward you mentioned sharp darts as well, and particularly in Has It Come to This he uses the term blinded but with the lights, which again is like, he gets, which come basically gets
used again in the next album.
Right.
So again, like it's like we've done with yourself, being kind of like him testing it, long-storm storytelling. He's very much into kind of referencing or cross-referencing themes with different songs. And I'm wondering whether he kind of wanted to perhaps do something more like A Granddad Come for Free earlier, but he didn't know how to do it yet.
I think it's kind of a hip-hop thing too, where they'll kind of start building kind of catchphrases that they'll use over and over again, maybe not in every song, but I feel like when you have like these collectives, and the one I have in mind is Black Hippie, Kendrick Lamar, and Schoolboy Q, when they were on the come up and they were doing all these songs together, they would kind of have like signature lines that they would use over and over again in each other's songs, kind of build that sort of familiarity. So I wonder if part of it is, you know, a hip hop influence, and part of it also might be he's trying to kind of do some world building on his own.
Yeah. I think so, yeah, apparently, yeah. So the only thing I think though with it slightly changes it is the use of Fahrenheit when it'll probably be Celsius. Where like the British uses the metric term. Because you got like my immediate go to seems to be the Eminem and D12, where like there's like all the kind of recurring motifs and lines. So no, yeah, I think you're right there. Before we head off, I want to quickly talk about It's Too Late. That's, again, I think that kind of references or kind of hints that all kind of stuff that you might explore a bit more in future albums in terms of the introspectiveness. And it is very kind of not self-deprecating, but very emotionally open that you probably wouldn't expect from a rap artist. For those who don't know, this is basically where he's just basically talking about how he's kind of basically naff at meeting his girlfriend and staying on time. And basically she dumps him.
Yeah.
But what were your thoughts on this film, on this one?
Well, it's definitely the downer of the album.
Yeah.
It's between this and The Weak Become Heroes. I think those two songs really show a lot of the emotional depth that he has.
Mm-hmm.
So for as much as he can make you laugh on, you know, don't mug yourself, you know, he can also not make you like tear up, but you know, it's definitely a very moving song. You know, you definitely feel for the situation.
Yeah. You can kind of see how the guy, oh, the guy who wrote Too Much Brandy, suddenly wrote Dry Your Eyes. And then you can kind of, if you listen to this one, you think, ah, okay, yeah, this is how he eventually would lead to Dry Your Eyes and that kind of emotional maturity stuff. And but again, it's storytelling. It does it in a way of building up an image of his kind of the protagonist of the song and just being crap at it. There's a great bit of how the song ends where is that emotional maturity is left open, where it's I walk in a trance with a wounded soldier stance and the everyday geezer stares throw me off balance. Now nothing holds significance and nothing holds relevance because the only thing I can see is their elegance, which is you realize what you've lost. But it's that kind of openness that I think gives Skinner a very kind of unique kind of emotional openness, for lack of a better term.
Right. Yeah, it's a beautiful line.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as well being in the middle, that's like kind of like the kind of downer. That's because it fits in between geezers, need excitement, and too much brandy and don't mug yourself. So it's the kind of like, okay, we're going to make you feel serious for a minute before we have all the drunk stuff come back.
Here's the reason we're going to have a bunch of drunk stuff.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So the reception of the album, the album did quite well, I think. So it's currently got 90 out of 100 on Metacritic. It's 5 out of 5 on AllMusic. Got A in Entertainment Weekly. The Guardian gave it 4. NME, 9. Pitchfork gave it 7.9, which I've not read the Pitchfork review. I'm too scared to. Rolling Stone gave it 4. Spin, 8. Uncut, 5. Village Voice, A-. It's done quite well. Yeah, in 2003, NME placed it at number 46 on their list of the 100 best albums of all time, and then put it at number 9 in the best 100 albums of the decade. Observer Music Monthly ranked it as the best album of the 2000s. And Simon Reynolds, who I mentioned earlier, placed the album on top of his list of the favourite albums of the 2000s with a special class of its own award. And Pitchfork placed it at number 10 on the list of the top albums of 2000 to 2004. And then for the whole decade, they placed it at number 36. So,
yeah, they came around.
Yeah, it's done quite well. Some of the feedback on it, critics things. Q called Skinner a vital new voice. Mojo was saying a lot of the Urban Vignettes fall somewhere between The Message and The Specials, Ghost Town, with their ordinariness and the brutish, unadorned simplicity of the music is part of their appeal, evoking the everyday tedium of real, quote unquote, youth culture. And it's a uniquely British voice. And yeah, Spin said that Skinner might be the most gifted rapper London has ever produced, except that he doesn't really rap. He pontificates, spins broken word yarns, and kicks running commentary. Spin continued saying that Skinner nails the quiet desperation of the white working class like a pub hooligan Marshall Mathers, with all of Slim Shady's good humour and none of his insanity.
Yeah, I was like, did he get the buzz that he got in the States because that they were looking for a new Eminem? I remember that being thrown around, though I never took it that seriously.
I think it's that time, and it's around, there's a good 4 or 5 years that anyone who was white that was trying to rap would immediately get classed to Eminem. There's a British female rapper called Lady Sovereign, who was around the time. I love those two albums are great. But she was dubbed by the British press Feminine.
Ah.
Yeah.
What was her catchphrase? Like the smallest rapper alive or something like that?
Biggest midget in the game.
Biggest midget in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. That was on the start of 9 to 5, Love Me, Hate Me. The biggest midget in the game.
Yeah. I remember seeing her on a late night show out here. And I was like, she's only here because of the streets.
Yeah, yeah. Was there a slight increased interest in kind of British hip hop at that point, or was that just something that was like what you was watching at the time? Or
I think he helped Dizzy Rascal kind of cross over with Boy in the Corner,
mm-hmm.
and I think that album turned a lot of people on to British hip hop. And then in 2010 with Plastic Beach, the Gorillaz album, I think that has. The Kano, is he on that song?
I'm not sure. I don't know Kano that often.
Let me look it up. But
yeah.
But by the time Plastic Beach had come out, you know, obviously like the Gorillaz were huge, but I just remember that no one was fazed that there were British rappers on that album. You know, like I think if he had done that on one of the first two Gorillaz albums, like people would have freaked out.
Yeah, British people can rap since when?
Yeah, but I think Mike Skinner kind of helped normalize it, though. It's still, I feel like, mainstream-wise, you know, most Americans will look at you funny if you were to mention British rap.
Oh, okay.
That's Bashy and Kano.
Bashy and Kano, right. So is there no high profile, I'm trying to think of high-profile British rappers that would have made it into... The only one I could think of is potentially Stormzy.
It was either Stormzy or Skepta. I think one of them did like a collab with Ed Sheeran.
I think it might be Stormzy. Again, Stormzy is someone I've not listened to that much. But I can't think of any other British rappers that might be big in the US at the moment.
I think Little Sims is starting to get a lot of press.
Mm-hmm.
But she's another person that, you know, kind of was brought over with a Gorillaz album.
Right. Okay. So, yeah. Yeah. I just find again, interesting that again, British rap is something that people still think. Could it still be classed as a novelty over on your side of the pond, or you think?
Yeah, I think we're just so far up our own buttholes here in America. We're.
Yeah.
Like, I think we just, like, started to accept that, you know, Africans could rap with the Black Panther soundtrack. Oh, this music's good. Like, of course it is.
Yeah.
We're not the only people that exist in the music universe.
Okay. I think one day someone's going to break out properly, I think. Yeah. And then suddenly realise later on that, oh my God, they're British. It's like when people watched House and didn't realise Hugh Laurie was British until about season 5.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, all our superheroes are actually British, right?
Yeah.
Like Tom Holland and Benedict mm-hmm. Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's in the thespians. Yeah. They've got the thespians in to do the...
I think Slick Rick is British, but no one ever seems to acknowledge that.
Is he?
I think he is.
I need to check that out. English-American. Okay.
Yeah, he was born in Mitcham.
Right. Oh, okay. My sister used to live there. Well, okay.
But I think he's the closest to, like, British rap where people don't freak out.
All right. I think he's down as British American on Wikipedia, so I think he's I think the Americans can claim him. So okay, so back to the Streets. You've mentioned you've seen them live before. So you've seen them live.
Yes.
So when was that?
I believe it was during the Grand Don't Come From Free tour.
Okay.
So it was the Streets. Dizzy opened for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, it was like, oh, cool. Two people that I'm super interested in seeing are touring together. And I think Dizzy in a 45-minute slot is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I remember he started freestyling over Tipsy by Jaquan, that beat.
Yeah.
And that was like, it was super cool. That was like the highlight of Dizzy's set. I mean, his songs, his Boy in the Corner album is great.
I think I listened to it once. I think it's one of those albums that I keep meaning to revisit at some point. But was that the only time you saw them then? Or
yeah, I saw them on that tour. I think I had tickets to see them on the Hardest Way to Make an Easy Living tour, but I had to like sell my tickets for something. But you know, I was interested in seeing them. I think when I saw them on the Grand Don't Come From Free tour, I'm sure it was sold out or very close to being sold out.
Okay.
Like people were very excited. My friend Jessica, who I met a few years after that show, when I found out that she also liked the Streets, I was like, oh, did you go see them at the Wiltern? She's like, oh yeah, that show was amazing. And I was like, yeah, there's this like older gentleman in like a white tuxedo dancing in the crowd. And she's like, yeah, I remember that guy.
All right.
So I was like, oh, it's Los Angeles. You know, like yeah. This is what you see.
Okay. I'm getting surprised that he almost sold out a venue in the US.
Yeah, yeah, I was like,
my gauge was...
I'd say it's a medium-sized venue, about 2,500 people.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, people were into that album. And I just remember him having a brandy keg on stage.
Oh, okay. So what? So I'm assuming which songs well, probably weren't a hit, but which songs were more popular from the album over the US? And was it Fit But You Know It and Dry Your Eyes and...
I wouldn't say that Dry Your Eyes had like a bigger reaction than anything. I mean, obviously like the singles were probably the most popular ones, Fit But You Know It. And I think even like Let's Push Things Forward got like a lot of reaction.
Oh, cool.
I mean, people at this point, like everyone's there for the Streets. Everyone knows all the songs.
Yeah. 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 So I think I've only seen them live once. I went into detail with the previous episode, but for those who can't be bothered to go back, they came back and did a kind of, what do you call this? Kind of like they said, I'm after kind of like retiring. And then after about like 8 or so years, he goes, oh, we're going to play a few shows, and decided to play Birmingham. Decided to play Birmingham and immediately sold out. I couldn't get a ticket. Went on the waiting list and suddenly got a ticket. And I think to this day, it's still the most I've ever spent on a gig ticket was to watch the Streets. As I said in the previous episode, I kind of left it feeling a bit flat, if I was honest. I think for being a 50 quid ticket, like I think I only played for about an hour and 15.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. And there's quite a few songs that they didn't play. Quite a few key singles they didn't play as well. Felt like they could have at least done an extra 20 minutes of the set. And I don't know, I just felt a bit, not let, I don't know. It's been several years since, and I'm still unsure about my reaction to it. I was glad I went. I'm glad I went. And like when some of the songs that started playing and the whole crowd just went bonkers, bonkers for him. But I don't know. There was just something slightly lacking, which was slightly disappointing, but, I'm glad I went. I don't think I wouldn't go and see him again, after that, but I'm glad I went, which is a bit of a shame considering I'm really quite a few of the songs.
Yeah, my friend went to that Hardest Way to Make an Easy Living tour, and I think he had like sound issues the whole show. Like the mics were feeding back, and he was not in a good mood that night.
Yeah.
And I believe they played a much smaller venue for that tour because that album didn't have as much impact as the first two.
So, yeah, I think also the venue that he played in Birmingham, sorry, is a place called the R2 Academy. And the main room is one of the worst venues in the city, in Birmingham, which is kind of weird. And considering it's technically like what his hometown, it's just something weird. There's something slightly off. But yeah, so other albums in the Streets discography. Again, there's a whole episode of me talking about Grand Old Comfort Free. So you know, everyone who's listened to that will know that it was an album that I upgraded to being one of my top tier favorite albums of all time in the process of that episode. But in terms of other albums of the Streets, where would you recommend people to go after this?
I guess I would go with Hardest Way to Make an Easy Living, just for Fake Street Hats. That song's great.
Yeah. That's a good song. I really like, I do like It Wasn't Famous from that album.
Yeah. That's a great song too.
Yeah. But Computer and Blues, the last one, I think I've only listened to about twice, so I can't really comment on that. The Everything is Borrowed, my comments on that in the previous episode with it is that I think a lot of the strength is individual songs, which I think raises my opinion of the album. And I forget the second half of the album is mainly kind of forgettable, but it has potentially my favourite song from the Streets on that, which is On the Edge of a Cliff.
Yeah,
which is a beautiful, beautiful song.
Yeah, I think about half that album is really good.
Yeah, yeah. I still think the majority of the second half is kind of fades into quite samey. But On the Edge of a Cliff, if there's ever one Street song, I'm just picturing Morrissey bloody covering it now. I don't really want that image. No, I'm not going to bother throwing the impression. Yeah, so if there's one Street song that I recommend you listen to, then if you only ever want to listen to one, I think I would go with Edge of a Cliff. It's completely different to all comedic songs, but yeah, that one. And I mean, very briefly, and with the Grand Tongue, very briefly, what are your thoughts on A Grand Old Comfort Free?
Oh, I love that album. I was in college, right? So I had this one brilliant idea that they should take the first two albums and turn it into a Mike Skinner Broadway musical.
Please tell me you tried it.
I mean, I started conceptualizing it in my head because, you know, A Grand Don't Come for Free tells a story, and you can easily take songs from honestly any of the other albums, but especially original pirate material, and you can insert some of those songs in there as well, and you could have, you know, a good 20 song musical.
Yeah. Don't Mug Yourself would fit really well in that, actually. Yeah. Don't Mug Yourself could easily, is probably the one that will fit into that. There's a YouTube comment actually on a reaction video, that reaction video where someone talks about Don't Mug Yourself Don't Mug Yourself's great. The whole album, Grand Old Comfort Free, is great. And then people going, it's not on that album. And basically an argument saying, it's not on the album. Yes, it is. No, it's not.
Make it easier for people. Just take both of them and turn it into a musical and be like, oh, I was talking about the musical production.
Yeah. Oh, man, I really want that now. I really do want that.
You know, it was just a few years too early. Now you have Lin-Manuel Miranda rapping and everything.
Yeah.
Broadway is ready for A Grand Don't Come for Free, the musical.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone who's listening who can make that happen. And make sure that me and Ryan get a cut of the profits.
Yeah, we're producers.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. yeah, we're automatically getting pursuit producer credits. So we're gearing to the end of our conversation, Ryan, and we get into the very important question, which is the song for the playlist. Now, for anyone who's not listened to this before, what this is that I'm going to ask Ryan to pick one song from the album to be immortalized forever on the Spotify Playlist Hall of Fame. And I just want to let you know that you are going to be following La Resistance from the South Park film. So you're going to have to pick so whatever song you pick, he's going to follow that.
Well, then the song is going to be Don't Mug Yourself.
Awesome. Great pick. And why that over others?
Like I said, it was the song that I would play for my friends to introduce them to the streets. So it should be the song that your listeners listen to for their introduction to the streets if they've never heard them.
What was the hit rate? So did you convert more people into streets fans from that song, or did you have people never speak to you again?
I mean, let's not be dramatic, but
yeah,
you know, this is definitely kind of a niche sort of fandom. If I find people that also like the streets, I feel like we're immediately bonded, and that if they need my social security number or my birthplace, I will give them all that information because I just immediately trust them.
Oh, okay. So basically if someone mugs you for your, so if someone tries to mug you, instead of using a knife, starts quoting the second verse of Don't Mug Yourself. It's like, have everything.
You're like, all right, don't mug me. Just don't. Yeah. If you're going to mug me, don't mug yourself.
That's the secrets of Ryan's heart.
His
streets lyrics.
I'll be like, oh, you can't be that bad of a person.
Yeah. So we've come to the end of the conversation, and it's been a lot of fun, Ryan. If people want to find you and your podcast, where can they find you?
The podcast is wherever you can find a podcast, wherever you're listening to a podcast. If you want to find us on socials, soundtrack_your is our Twitter account, and soundtrackcast is our Instagram account.
Yes, and I believe you've got a couple of Pickadisc alumni coming up on. You've had Hannah and Lily from Society Hours Media Gen X, because Hannah's been on this podcast in the past. And
yeah, we've had Hannah and Lily a couple times.
Yeah.
And
I think Colin as well.
Yeah, we've got Colin from We Dig Music and Free with this month's issue. We've both done episodes with Brian Colburn of Playlist Wars.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So plenty of crossover as well. I don't think at time recording episode with Colin hasn't come out yet, has it?
It'll be out in May, end of May.
Anyway, so you'll probably be out by the time you hear this. And you also then got someone, you know, like your best looking guest to come as well.
Oh, yeah. We've got Matt from Pickadisc coming up on the podcast.
Yeah. So I think from the schedules, I think in a couple of weeks from this airing, I think you'll see me appear on Soundtrack Your Life talking about a soundtrack very, very dear to me as well. So do give Soundtrack My Life a good listen. It's a very good podcast and it's very enjoyable.
Thank you.
No problem. And Ryan, thank you ever so much for coming on to the podcast. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm hoping that I've managed to debunk some, or debunk myths, but solve some lingering questions about what exactly a geezer is, at least.
Yeah, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
So I guess last of all, like, how big did they get in the UK? Like, were they selling out stadiums ever? Or like, how big were they?
I don't think they sold out stadiums. Their original comeback tour that I was on sold out very, very quickly. I had to be on a waiting list. So they're quite big. So the street, yeah. I'm not sure about the young generation, but yeah, there's people my age and above. Yeah, they would recognize the name of the streets.
Well, I envy you guys.
So maybe one day you'll be able to see them again, because I think he's still touring. But again, thank you, Ryan, for coming on and allowing me to talk again about the streets.
That was a blast. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Pickadisc, and I've been your host, Matthew Laver. Our theme music is Pump by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com.
Pick a Disc is hosted by the We Made This Podcast Network, and you can find them on www.spreaker.com/user/WeMadeThis. You can find the Pick a Disc show site on www.spreaker.com/show/pickadisc. You can find us on all the usual social media type places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter under Pick a Disc. You can also email us on pickadisc@gmail.com. Until next time, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Frame to frame.
For Sean's benefit, these are all ex-players. Just so you know, mate. Yes, they used to be NBA players.
If you don't know who Shaquille O'Neal is, there's a problem.
Let me just announce that right then. There's a problem because just to put my cards on the table, I did not know that these were real basketball players until halfway through the movie. And then the joke only hit me halfway through. I was like, oh, now I understand where the gag's coming from. Because I thought
you've never heard of Shaquille O'Neal.
I mean, I've heard of him, but I didn't know that was him. So yeah, it's probably not really much of an answer, is it, really? It's pretty lame.
Chucky Vision, a Chucky podcast.
This was their first film as Full Moon. Before that, they were Empire Pictures for a while, and they did a few movies, produced a few movies. This was the first big hit for Full Moon. I think it was just this film for 89, and then in 90, they produced like 3 films, and then in 91, they produced like 5 films, and then in 92, they were producing like 10 films all in one year.
Yeah, that's a lot.
They exploded during the early 90s, and they've still been kind of like that today. Like, announced in like 2019, and then it was done during 2020. They announced the Deadly 10, these 10 movies they were going to produce and create in 1 year, and they were going to live stream all the behind the scenes and stuff. Sadly, they only made like 2 of those films because then Corona hurt, so like couldn't actually push out as much as they used to. That's kind of their spirit, kind of this independent spirit. You know, Troma does it as well, a weird mixture between quality and quantity.
Academy Watch, a prestige film podcast.
Every other discipline in film comes from somewhere else. Acting comes from theater, writing comes from writing, you know, like music comes from music, like everything comes from somewhere else except editing. Editing is the one thing that is intrinsically filmic about film, and to not show that is just a hilarious disrespect to
it's completely
editors.
It's completely insane. That's the one cat, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I hate it. I hate cutting any of them, but I can kind of squint and sort of kind of see if you've got to pick ones to eliminate, like eliminating some of these technical ones. And I mean, score seems like a bridge too far to me, but you know, fine. But like you said, editing is just such an intrinsic part of the art.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.